It's a bonus Nerdcast! I'm Emily Stevenson, and I'm hosting today. Donald Trump is headed back to the U.S. after meeting the North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. The upshot? The U.S. will stop doing military training drills in South Korea, and North Korea says it will eventually give up its nuclear program. But the details are pretty scant. We'll decode what President Trump said after the summit with our guests. Foreign Affairs correspondent Holly Tusey.
Hello.
And Michael Crowley, National Security Editor.
Hello.
All right. The first thing we want to pick apart, this line from President Trump.
We signed a very comprehensive document today, and I think most of you have been given that document, but we signed a very, very comprehensive document.
Michael, help us out.
Well, you know, this is Donald Trump, so anything he does is big and bold and comprehensive, but I really don't think the reality matches the rhetoric. Surprise, surprise. We knew that Donald Trump was going to claim a huge victory and success. He basically said as much going in, but this document, although wide in scope, is not comprehensive at all in the sense of having a lot of specifics, details, implementation plans. It is really, to my eyes, a reiteration of what Trump and Kim, through the South Koreans, have been saying since March when they first agreed to meet. U.S. security assurances, which can take a lot of different forms, in exchange for complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, which can mean a lot of things and can happen over a lot of different timelines. So I don't think it's moved the ball much at all.
So you hinted at something that I wanted to talk about next, Holly, which is that we need to unpack what denuclearization even means in this situation. That word means different things to the two sides. So what are we really talking about when we're talking about North Korea having agreed to denuclearize?
Right. And just as an add-on to what Mike said, what I'm also struck by is Trump calling it a comprehensive document. The word document as opposed to deal. And I think that that's really important. I think there's going to be a tendency for people to call it a deal or an agreement, but, you know, it's really not even worthy of those two terms. In terms of denuclearization, basically when the U.S. talks about it, the general sense, at least in Congress and elsewhere, has been making sure that North Korea, which is considered a pariah authoritarian regime, a dangerous one, does not possess any nuclear weapons. Or any other type of real nuclear capability. But when the North Koreans say that they want to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula, they are also including the removal of U.S. troops from South Korea and around the region, which is the way that the U.S. puts its umbrella over, its nuclear umbrella over South Korea. So the North Koreans have a much grander view of this and a much longer timeline. The Americans generally have not. But it's been noteworthy to hear the Trump administration officials repeatedly refer to the complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, not simply just North Korea, which sort of suggests that they're falling a little bit for the North Korean view of things.
Holly, let's talk about another thing that you pointed out, which is another line from the president over the last 12 hours or so.
I really think that Otto is someone who did not die in vain. I told this to his parents. Special young man, and I have to say, special parents, special people. Otto did not die in vain. He had a lot to do with us being here today.
What is he talking about there?
Otto Warmbier was a 20-something American college student who was taken prisoner when he visited North Korea. He was held prisoner for more than a year, and then he was returned to the United States last year in a comatose state, eventually dying a few days afterward. Warmbier's death and his detention really upset President Trump. At that point last year, President Trump was referring to Kim Jong-un and the North Koreans as, vicious human rights abusers.
Monsters,
sick puppies, madmen, those sorts of things. And Warmbier's death really affected Trump. But now, as he's trying to strike a deal, an agreement, whatever you want to call it, with Kim, Trump seems to have cast Otto Warmbier's death as a catalyst for trying to bring a change in the relationship. But that being said, his flattery of Kim, his you know, words saying, like, saying the guy is smart and that we're going to have a terrific relationship. I mean, he's embracing a man whose authoritarian regime is really, has no parallel when it comes to human rights abuses. And it's just, it's astonishing to see this turnaround. And, you know, it was basically exactly a year ago that Warmbier was returned to the United States and died. And it's really astonishing to see Trump say such kind words about the man whose regime detained and eventually basically killed Otto Warmbier.
Hard to square those things. The last thing that we wanted to talk about was something that you guys have touched on a little bit already, too. And this is a line from the president earlier.
This is complete denuclearization of North Korea. It will be verified.
So how do we know at this point the denuclearization of North Korea is going to be verified?
We don't know. We have Trump's words. Kim himself has not said anything like this. Kim said very little, and the document that the two leaders signed made no reference to verification, and certainly no reference to what nuclear experts say would have to be many dozens, quite likely hundreds, of international inspectors who would come in and monitor a North Korean nuclear program that is vast and sprawling. May include up to 60 nuclear warheads, multiple nuclear facilities, a much more advanced, robust, and geographically widespread program than Iran ever developed. So Trump, and then bear in mind that these inspectors would come in, theoretically, if you really did have this process of denuclearization like Trump is suggesting, we will see. These inspectors would come in. They would likely overwhelmingly be Westerners into the world's most closed and paranoid society and start snooping around into the most sensitive military and scientific facilities in North Korea, and indeed also probably be searching for unreported hidden facilities, because that's sort of part of the deal with these things. So they are knocking on doors where they're not expected and they're not invited. It's quite hard to fathom. And, you know, some nuclear security experts have said it could take 10 years for this process to play out. So when you try to wrap your mind around that, you really start to realize how difficult this challenge is. And I just want to tack on to the end of that, the word trust, which Trump used that word or variations thereof several times during this summit. And it's a little hard for me to understand how, after one meeting with Kim, a few different conversations over the course of his stay in Singapore, and I should add, possibly one conversation prior to the summit that he did not disclose until an interview with ABC's George Stephanopoulos, in which he seemed to concede that he had spoken to Kim secretly, how he is able to have developed this sense of trust with the leader of a country that has routinely lied and deceived the United States and backed out of its commitments when it comes to nuclear arrangements. So there's a lot going on in that Trump statement, and when you drill into it, you realize the scale of this challenge, and also to the degree to which, to go back to the very top of our conversation, the document, such as it was not at all comprehensive.
And I'll add to that. We don't know what we don't know about North Korea's nuclear program. And one of the things that we do know is one of the things we're not sure of is the fact that many of these facilities, these nuclear facilities, are believed to be underground. And so the notion that we're necessarily going to get the sort of access that we want in, as Mike described, a very paranoid society, which might see any sort of intrusion by an outsider as a threat to the regime, you know, that's just going to be hard to believe. Kim's number one priority is ensuring his regime's survival. And the U.S., as part of this document, offered him some vague security assurances. But if he sees a situation where you have a bunch of outsiders coming in, exposing his people to the rest of the world and the ideas from the rest of the world, he's probably going to be freaked out by that in the long run. I think there's just a lot of room left to figure out. And as Mike said, trust is a really, really major part of it. And right now, Trump might say whatever he wants to say, but we also know this about Trump, which is he has a habit of changing his mind, sometimes within minutes, sometimes within days. So let's not be surprised if in a few days we're sitting here and Trump has tweeted out something nasty and terrible about Kim Jong-un, and we're having a completely different conversation.
Good points, both of y'all. Michael, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Holly, thank you too.
Great.